Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, I'm Bryn Lucas, and this is the Autosport Podcast. So after 110 Grand Prix starts, the most podium finishes in Formula One before his first win, and a slightly broken nose as well, Lando Norris finally scored his first victory, and he did it around the Miami Dolphins Hard Rock Stadium, with Max Verstappen a distant second after taking the sprint win on Saturday. Charles Leclerc on the podium in third in a not-so-blue Ferrari after all. That was the top three, but what about the rest? Well, an iconic result for Lando Norris, as we say, bringing home his first ever Grand Prix victory, his 16th podium in his Formula One career. Carlos Sainz came home fourth, but after a penalty was demoted down to fifth. That promoted Sergio Perez up to fourth in the second of the Red Bulls. Lewis Hamilton in sixth for the first of two Mercedes, the second one, George Russell, down in eighth, and Yuki Tsunoda coming home in seventh, a great result for RB. Fernando Alonso occupying ninth place, as he seems to do quite well, doesn't he, in the top 10, and Esteban Ocon bringing home a solitary point for Alpine. They'll be happy with that. Further afield, well, it wasn't a great result for Lance Stroll, the second Aston Martin finishing down in 17th place, and Daniel Ricciardo, that looked so good in the sprint, well, he finished 15th. Kevin Magnussen in the second Haas coming home in 18th place after another penalty weekend, and Logan Sargeant, the only DNF. Well, joining me to discuss everything that went on at the Miami Grand Prix, I am delighted to have, from over there in the United States, Alex Kalanorkis. Alex, it's great to see you. It's fair to say that that was a pretty enjoyable Grand Prix.
Yeah, I think. Sorry, first of all, hello, Bryn. Hello, listeners. You've actually been to sleep and got up on a Monday morning. I'm still haven't been to bed yet. It's still Sunday night. Well, not really. Not officially. It's past midnight in Miami. But there we go. I thought it was actually quite an entertaining race, even without the sort of the surprise winner, the change of the narrative other than Red Bull domination. I think. It's highly likely Max Verstappen would have won without the safety car appearing and boosting Lando Norris so much. But I think there's more than enough to say it would have been very, very, very close. And as I'm sure we'll get to, there's reasons why Norris could be considered to be a genuine victory contender even without the safety car. So that is very interesting when you dig into it. And then you had the fact that, look, this wasn't a race and a weekend where Red Bull just crushed the field by 30 seconds, I think. Norris probably should have been on sprint pole had things not gone wrong with the tyres when he moved from the mediums to the soft on the Friday night qualifying, and then he doesn't get taken out of the sprint race. It could have been a very, very different story altogether the whole weekend. And Ferrari really wasn't very far behind Red Bull either. You had Max Verstappen not at his best, I think it's fair to say. I think he did a very good job with a tricky package for a change for Red Bull, but then made a critical mistake in the race that badly damaged his car. And again, that's a reason why I think we have to say that Norris had a genuine victory shot, even if the safety car hadn't appeared. So we'll get to the reasons why later, I'm sure. But thoroughly entertaining. Then, you know, that's not notwithstanding the Kevin Magnussen's many transgressions, the crashes, the controversy. And Miami, I think, you know, it gets a lot of stick for what it's tried to do. But I think when, you know, you look back and see the type of race, the type of event that the organizers wanted to put on, the people that they wanted to attract, the effort they wanted to go to, I think, you know, you understand it more. I think it benefited from the fact it was less look at me with the big driver intros and things like that. Did get a very special, my words carefully, a very special guest with former President Donald Trump appearing. The home crowd liked it at least. Miami finally got a good race for the song and dance event that it puts on. So congratulations to them, but obviously most of all, congratulations to Lando Norris.
Yeah, just when the drivers aren't really allowed to be political, the sport apparently is allowed to be political, but we should maybe park that big bus.
What I would just say is that if there's anybody who is complaining about political references or political sport, I mean, don't watch Formula One then. It's arguably the most political sport. Saudi Arabia sports washing its image. You know, the Iron Curtain race back in, you know, with the Hungarian Grand Prix. You can go through the calendar and find a problem with every single race. I mean, the arms that the UK is selling to despotic governments. Formula One, unfortunately, of course, we should always point it out when it's complicit in a way in horrific things for people. We should always call this out, but unfortunately, it's not going to change. It always has been very rich people driving very rich cars, very expensive cars, excuse me, and that's unfortunately a fact of the world we live in. So yeah, if you're asking for sport and politics not to mix, Formula One is not for you.
What is for me is Lando Norris's fantastic performance. I mean, you said that he could have put it on pole if it wasn't for what happened previous, but it was a really, really accomplished, assured performance. There were moments I mentioned in the video that we recorded about 5 hours ago that I'd bitten my fingernails down to the nubs on the last few laps of that race, because you were just thinking, come on, don't bin it, come on, from a British perspective, of course, watching on. But it was a really popular victory up and down the paddock. We saw when he got out of the car just how many drivers who came up and, you know, gave him a big squeeze, a big pat on the back. People like Fernando Alonso, people like George Russell, the last person who wasn't in a Ferrari or Red Bull to win a Grand Prix with Brazil 2022. But there were others, Carlos Sainz, of course, his good mate Carlos Sainz. It was lovely to see on camera, but I believe when you're out there, you get a sense of just how popular he is in the paddock.
Yeah, completely. I think it's still important to start at what you did see on the camera in terms of the drivers congratulating him. I think you listen to Lando in the press conference, that's what he will take away more than anything from those immediate moments after the race, was that the people who he has the greatest of respect for, his fellow rivals, like him so much that they were absolutely chuffed with his victory. And I think Max Verstappen hates losing. You cannot deny that. He said he wasn't happy with his day. But I think if he could pick anyone to have lost a race to, he'd pick Lando Norris. So, yeah, there was a lot of love for Lando shining through. There's a lot of love for McLaren. Again, like, look, they welcomed Donald Trump into their garage before the race. They put out a statement basically distancing themselves from him. That has happened. But, you know, regardless of your perspective on other elements that we might not like, as we talked about in motorsport, they're a very popular team, all around the world. Norris is a big part of that. He's the personality that he's got is pivotal to his standing, to the team standing. Your Oscar Piastri, who is absolutely fantastic, drove superbly today. Thought was a little bit naughty with Carlos Sainz at turn 11 when he went off the track, but was just unfortunate with, you know, the safety car timing and other things, and obviously Sainz losing the rear of his Ferrari and breaking his front wing. But yeah, it's a very popular team, and it was a really sort of emotional, cathartic win because they lost their former advisor, Gilles de Ferran, the Indy 500 winner, over the Christmas period. And Andrea Stella pointing out, you know, that he took a pin of de Ferran's helmet that was pinned to his top onto the podium. So de Ferran was with us. This race win is for him. So, yeah, it really was an emotional day for the McLaren team. And, yeah, just Norris, it just... he's rather infectious. He in terms of his likability, I think it comes very naturally to him. You see that, you listen to that in his answers. He gives long flowing answers and sometimes ramble on, don't make a lot of sense, because that's just his sort of irrepressible personality. And equally, he has made the full use of the tools around him. He's a very well resourced guy, money not a problem growing up and getting him into motorsport. But hey, look, we've got another driver on the grid, even more in Lance Stroll, who's just blocking a seat for a better driver. So, you know, Norris has made the most of what he's got. And he's, you know, there's a case to be made that he was almost criminally underrated by many Formula One fans, where even some observers, there's chatter in the press box earlier on this weekend that, you know, Norris is so overrated, he should have had so many wins in this McLaren car, which I think is thoroughly disingenuous, although I do wish there were occasions where he had fought Max Verstappen very, very much harder. He and I have chatted about why that wasn't the case. But yeah, Norris, a fantastic win. I think I just want to share a couple of little anecdotes, and I'm doing my classic thing of rambling on with my answer, but just from the press conference. First of all, Max Verstappen and Charles Leclerc turned up. They'd finished their TV interviews rather before Lando Norris came into the press conference room, which is also the Miami Dolphins NFL team locker room, and Charles Leclerc sat down in the third place finisher spot, and Max Verstappen, just on autopilot, automatically sat in the middle where the race winner's supposed to go. And he laughed his head off when he realised he had to move. He handled that very well. I thought, fair play, Max. And then Norris came in about 5 minutes later, and he swept past, and he stank of champagne. It was truly the smell of victory. So yeah, a little bit of insight, I hope, there from the press conference.
So, what has Lando been saying? What have the other drivers been saying? Not just about Lando's performance, about their own. If we stick with the three that walked into that press conference and sat in the positions 3, 2, 1, if we start with third place, Charles Leclerc, what did he say? Because Ferrari got a decent result again this weekend, third and fourth, and it was Charles Leclerc who was ahead of his teammate Carlos Sainz. Not for once, but certainly a good marker for him, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think, Leclerc, his race really went wrong right from the start. He basically got too much wheel spin as soon as he let the clutch go and was rather swamped by everybody behind him. Max Verstappen swung across the cover from pole position, but didn't really need to because Leclerc just wasn't there. So yeah, it all went wrong immediately. And then in a weird way, he was saved by Sergio Perez getting turn one so completely badly wrong. He nearly wiped out his teammate, which was pretty impressive. Impressively bad. Max Verstappen reckoned that there was the barest bit of contact. He reckoned it even scratched the rear of his car. He sort of saw a mark. Maybe we'll get to what that might have been a little bit later. But with Charles Leclerc, I think ultimately he realised that Ferrari didn't have the pace today. I think he was quite hopeful after what he saw in the sprint yesterday that if he could stay within DRS, maybe he could be a threat. Perez pushing everybody wide and robbing momentum and things like that, and Leclerc's bad start meant Verstappen was gone DRS wise from the start of the race. So made Leclerc's job a lot harder. He was sliding around, but he just, you know, he had the air of a man who just knew, again, someone else has picked up a non-Red Bull win. But also, I think just saw him in the paddock afterwards and he did seem rather dejected. Was kind enough to wish me a safe flight home, which was nice of him. But yeah, I think he just accepts that, or he just realizes that, yeah, it could have been an opportunity for Ferrari and it didn't work out that way.
Talking about Carlos Sainz very quickly, because there was, when I recorded the video a few hours ago now, there was an investigation pending, or going on, an ongoing investigation, I should say, about him and his collision with Oscar Piastri. The fallout of that, can you give us a quick update? I know that he's been demoted one position.
Yes, Carlos Sainz, given 5 seconds added to his race time, drops him behind Sergio Perez in the order. He goes from fourth to fifth. For the clash, as I mentioned earlier, with Oscar Piastri down at turn 17 at the end of the back straight, it was rather unfortunate. They had a controversial fight up to that point with Piastri's defence, as I mentioned. And yeah, Sainz got it wrong. The stewards say that basically it's clear to us that car 55, Carlos Sainz, was to blame for the collision. In the overtake attempt, he braked late, missed the apex, in the process lost the rear with a resulting collision. In the circumstances, we find car 55 to be predominantly to blame for the collision. But what's interesting is that they say that the standard penalty for this foot for a collision is 10 seconds with 2 penalty points. In light of the mitigating circumstances, we therefore impose a 5-second time penalty with 1 penalty point. But rather bafflingly, The mitigating factor simply is put as the fact that but for the slight loss of control of the rear by car 55, the collision likely would not have happened and it would have been hard but good racing. I mean, well, that's not mitigating circumstances at all. That's just explaining what went wrong and apparently saving him 5 seconds of race time. So baffling decision by the stewards, not for the first time this season or even weekend, let's face it. So yeah, unfortunate for Sainz overall. I thought he had another strong weekend, although not at Leclerc's level, and obviously Leclerc missing all the practice with that spin and then an overheating clutch in FP1. So yeah, overall a disappointing weekend for Sainz. He was nice enough to go over and congratulate Andrea Stella while Stella was doing his media briefing after the race. So yeah, a lot of respect for his old team and good on Carlos for doing that.
He seems to be a fairly likable chap, especially with all the noise going on around him, where he's going to be, what he's going to do, all that kind of thing. Talk about Max Verstappen very quickly, because you said about him having a toughish weekend, really, but tyres seem to dominate Miami. There's a lot of chatter pre-sprint race as well. So talk us through the tyre issue and Max's woes, really. Sort of woes, anyway.
Yeah, so they're twofold. Obviously it's all relative when it comes to Max Verstappen not having a good weekend. He still won a race, claimed 2 pole positions and extended his championship lead. So it's not exactly an awful weekend for him. And I think that's another reason why he was so chilled about Lando winning, is because, you know, doesn't harm his title defence, attack, whatever we're doing, his romp to another world title. But anyway, twofold with the tyres. Obviously, basically the qualifying issue was the fact that the soft tyre in the heat with the tricky track surface, it's a bit sort of a little bit rougher this year because it's aged, it's a year old. You know, they replaced the surface completely for the 2023 event after the inaugural event here 2 years ago. And basically just with everything that was going on, it was just so easy to overheat. So the drivers were just, basically Max himself said in Grand Prix qualifying, that is, he basically said, you know, you didn't know what you were going to get. You were guessing. It was almost like you could do exactly the same as the lap before, but because the factors that you just almost aren't aware of, the tyres are that much hotter and suddenly it's gone. You saw that with Lando Norris in sprint qualifying. Came in. I mean, he lost 8 tenths in the first sector. He nearly crashed it about 4 times. It was truly impressive. And then actually from then I didn't lose any time. So that's why I think he should have been on sprint pole position as well. But yeah, then when it came to the race, actually, the issue was less about, it's always about tyre overheating, but actually the sort of tyre degradation wasn't that much of a problem. And this is why I maintain that Norris was a genuine victory contender, because he got into a position where he was able to, he would have been able to have a huge tyre life offset. Essentially, he was, you know, out on the medium tyres when Perez had pitted. Max Verstappen came back out on the hards and Norris was quicker by several tenths a lap. Pirelli reckons that medium could have done 50 laps because the surface was consistent, it was predictable, you know, they just weren't getting the usual degradation, but you would have had the sort of age and wear problem come the end, you know, with Verstappen on much older tyres and Norris finally having made a pit stop with younger tyres. So the big problem for Max was that the car felt okay, but still not ideal because of everything we talked about, because it was, you know, it's a tricky layout, it's a tricky surface, and they did all have in the back of their mind this overheating issue at various points if they pushed too hard. So basically Max went onto the hard tire and was like, oh my god, my car's way worse, that we can't handle it on the hard tire. We had understeering the high speed, loose rear in the low speed, and with that balance you just couldn't do anything. But Christian Horner is adamant that when Max Verstappen clattered the chicane and took the bollard out, he damaged the floor significantly, and that's what was causing the issues. Now there's a few things to dig into here, because it's interesting, you know, we're fairly sure there's no love lost between Horner and the Verstappens, and it was interesting basically that Horner's highlighting a mistake from Max. Max in the press conference that was put to him, and he said, well, it didn't feel any different to me. Didn't know what it was. Did say in the press release, the team released later, that he was quoted as saying he did think that the floor damage was there. But interestingly, Perez had the same feeling on the hard tyre. He had the high-speed understeer and the low-speed loose rear. So clearly not something good for Red Bull. And just, yeah, the car, didn't have its usual advantage. It couldn't get the tyres in the perfect window for the car balance. So yeah, while the sort of tyre management, usual really careful or often very careful tyre contest that we're so used to didn't happen, still tyres did impact Max Verstappen's race. But if I could come back to Lando Norris, I think the question of could he have won without the safety car, essentially McLaren knew he had the pace in hand when he was still on old mediums, and Verstappen even said it himself in the post-race interviews with Jenson Button that he heard those times and he was like, "Whoa, this is going to be interesting." McLaren would have just left Norris out until he wasn't doing personal best times, and by that point he could have had a 15-20 lap tire advantage. Now he would have pitted, he would have had to have passed both Ferraris and Piastri. Perez would have been a factor as well, and that was hard. Overtaking was tricky, very tricky. It's why you saw so many incidents and things like that this weekend. But the McLaren was set up with a slightly smaller rear wing than perhaps it would have done previously, because its updates added so much downforce this weekend. And just the fact that he would have had a huge tyre life offset makes him a big factor, plus the fact that Max had a hobble car. So it's plausible he could have made those passes, he could have arrived at the back of Verstappen, and he could have got by. The evidence is there to suggest that. We just never know whether it would have happened.
Well, before we continue, last week marked the 30th anniversary of the horrible Imola 1994 weekend that tragically claimed the lives of Roland Ratzenberger and Ayrton Senna. And in episode one of a new James Allen on F1 podcast, the man himself remembers the legacy of Ayrton, including interviews with the new Autosport editor-in-chief Rebecca Clancy, Brazilian journalist Julian Carasoli, Ayrton Senna's niece and CEO of the Senna Institute, Bianca Senna, and Manish Pandey, the producer of that 2010 movie bearing the Senna name. Well, here's a sneak peek of that Pandey interview.
I mean, you worked so hard, didn't you, over many years to get the Senna family on board, get them fully bought into the project. And I wonder, what did you observe when you actually did this? You know, you launched it. Of course, they were there at the premiere in Brazil. I remember that. I was there myself. Very lucky to be there. What did you observe of their reaction to the way the world responded to Ayrton's story through your film?
It's a really pointed question. I think Senna existed as a kind of ideal for them after his death. And that death wasn't, I mean, you know, in a previous life I was a doctor, and there are two ways people basically die. It's an expected death, somebody's older or whatever, or you have sudden death. And I think sudden death robs you of the ability to really reflect on your emotions, reflect on how you're going to get through all of this. And I think we have to remember that the movie actually came out in 2010. So it came out 16 years after he died. And the thing about movies, the thing about great television, the thing about storytelling like this is if it's done properly, it's very, very emotional. If it's very emotional, it's very evocative. And I think what we did was, it's not meant to sound mawkish, I think we brought him back to life. But I think what was really painful for them is we killed him again.
That's the James Allen on F1 podcast, with episode one being released in full on the 7th of May on the Autosport YouTube channel and wherever you get your podcasts from too. But back to Miami.
Yeah, there's the tyre chat, as I said, was quite a noisy chat. And Helmut Marko decided to come wading in and say some things as well. And I read an article that Philip Clearen had written. Philip, that's his formal name, Phil Clearen had written. And it said that Helmut Marko had called Mercedes' move to mediums in the qualifying session an act of desperation because no one could really understand what was going on with the tyres. So when people like Helmut Marko are joining the conversation and talking about other teams, is that a Red Bull tactic at the moment to take the focus away from them? Or is it that they just literally talk about what's going on with the tyres and Helmut Marko saying that nobody knows what's going on? Look at Mercedes. That was a real desperate idea to try to move on to the theoretically slower tyre in a qualifying session.
Yeah, there's a few things I think to unpack there. One, we know there's no love lost between Mercedes and Red Bull, even without everything that was going on at Red Bull earlier on this year. And look, Oliver Mintzlaff, essentially the boss of Red Bull overall, waded in this weekend to warn Toto Wolff off with this chat of, I'm going to sign Max Verstappen, which is a sign of how sort of serious things are getting on that front. So I think we can interpret Marco's comments as a little bit of gamesmanship, a little bit of, well, I'm going to give as good as I get sort of thing, or my team's going to get. And they never miss an opportunity to pile pressure on Mercedes when they can. The other thing about the medium tyre tactic in qualifying is something that Lando Norris tried as well. Pirelli basically saying that, look, these teams, there was surprisingly little in terms of pure performance between the medium tyre and the soft tyre. It was about a tenth, maybe two tenths, but that it had been expected to be 6 or 7 tenths. So the fact that the drivers could get a much more predictable balance on the yellow tyres, basically, that it was worth trying. Ultimately, it wasn't quicker, as Norris proved, as I think Russell proved. Was he on the soft? Or one of them at Merckx ended up being quicker on the soft than the medium. So, yeah, it was worth a try. Was worth a try because it was just so hard to avoid hitting the overheating moment with the softs, which was utterly unpredictable for all the teams. So, yeah, interesting comments from Marco. But, a lot to go over with that, I would say.
Loads and loads of different stories from up and down the paddock. In fact, it seems to be one of those Grand Prix where, excitingly for us, when we were watching on, there's story after story after story. I know we've only got you for limited time, so I'm going to try and pick the stories as well as I can. I'm sure listeners will disagree with how I'm achieving it. But Yuki Tsunoda and Daniel Ricciardo. Now, they fair bit back, but Daniel Ricciardo had a really, really good sprint race. Really good sprint race, came fourth. He went on the team radio and was telling them how much he enjoyed being at the front end and this is where he should be and that sort of thing. And then come qualifying in the Grand Prix, didn't get out of Q1, finished 15th on the grid. I know he had a grid penalty to start with, but finished 15th overall. And his teammate swept home seventh. So once again, when you look at RB, it's not Daniel Ricciardo that's looking the strongest driver by some margin.
Yeah, Ricciardo, an interesting one, because obviously it was brilliant in sprint qualifying and in the sprint race. I think, again, it just shows you the sort of dark arts of the tyre and how tricky it is with that, because he basically was like, look, I went for the final run in Q3 and Grand Prix qualifying and just couldn't make it work. And from then on, he was trapped, really. Like, both RBs benefited from a safety car stop. That's pivotal in Tsunoda getting points. But the fact that Ricciardo was trapped in the pack behind and with all the DRS trains and things like that going on, it wasn't, you know, everybody around, lots of people around him benefited as well. And he got his elbows out with Oscar Piastri later on. I thought McLaren was so sensible in saying to Oscar, look, we cannot risk a safety car. That's really smart. It's a really slick operation to sort of make that call. Incidentally, Lando Norris said in the press conference he was thinking about going for the fastest lap on the final final lap of the race, but he imagined Andreas Stella sitting on the pit wall going, no, Lando, don't do it. So he didn't do it. So, back to RB. Yeah, he's sort of, it's unfortunate with Ricciardo that he just can't find this consistency, but the fact that the high points are there, at least that's something to build on for the rest of the year.
Couple other stories out there. One is Kevin Magnussen. Now, Kevin Magnussen, Logan Sargeant, not having the best of times. Kevin Magnussen's current teammate Nico Hülkenberg, we know he's going to Sauber next year, soon to be Audi. But Magnussen's driving for his seat. Logan Sargeant is driving for his seat as well at Williams. And they came together. Kevin Magnussen was collecting penalties again, wasn't he? He got 35 seconds in the sprint race, 10 seconds in this Grand Prix, 20 seconds out in Saudi Arabia. And I'm just going to put it to you that Kevin Magnussen, alongside Logan Sargeant, very, very close to not having a drive in 2025.
Yeah, I think Magnussen is in a much stronger position because we expect Haas and Ferrari to want Ollie Bearman in what is soon to be not Nico Hülkenberg's seat. So, yeah, I think Magnussen's position is pretty strong. What won't have helped him this weekend is I'm led to believe that Haas is pretty cross with him for what he did and said after the sprint race, because he basically was just like, yeah, I did it for the team. I did everything you saw that was outrageous and over the line. I did it because the team needs it. And the team were like, well, we didn't tell you to do it, Kevin. Like, also the fact, yeah, there were, Kevin was a little bit unfortunate in that Nico Hülkenberg did jump the chicane, as Magnussen later did. I'm fairly sure he maintained DRS, so I think it was Piastri ahead. There's no investigation and no penalty. Magnussen gets that and does the same thing and gets that with a penalty for leaving the track and gaining a lasting advantage. So, yeah, it's again, more stewarding inconsistencies that very, I'm sure, very frustrating. But, yeah, Haas won't have appreciated that from Magnussen. But the more worrying thing than anything else, well, you know, even more worrying than... And again, this, but to be fair, this could have implications for his 2025 future. He's 2 points away from a race ban now. He's on 10 points leaving the weekend. Like any one incident, you know, I said the Carlos Sainz incident, he has a Carlos Sainz incident and the stewards don't give ridiculous mitigation factor in Imola and he's missing Monaco. So he's really up against it. He also wasn't very smart in what he said after the sprint race to Sky Sports F1. You know, we do appreciate drivers and sports people being candid in what they say. And I know Lewis Hamilton appreciated what Magnussen said about his driving in the sprint race, but it wasn't very smart to say, look, I did that all deliberately. It was all very cynical. He should have said, yeah, the smarter thing would have been, I tried something, I made a mistake, we move on. It's not very interesting. And I, as a journalist, would always prefer what was actually said. But you've got to think smart in top-level sport. And Magnussen didn't seem to do that this weekend. And I think that has annoyed Haas. And yeah, it's not a good look. The only thing I'll say is that Kevin Magnussen... He's not a big personality off the track, but he makes it very interesting on the track. That drive, yeah, he cat-handed against Tsunoda in Shanghai, and then 5 minutes later was absolutely breathtaking battling Lance Stroll. So, yeah, he's a frustrating character it's a frustrating case because he does bring things to Formula One.
He certainly does. I mean, I guess it's that kind of Ronnie O'Sullivan snooker thing, you know, sometimes you need, or Jason Plato in British Touring Car back in the day, you know, you need the panto villain sometimes to bring the stories, and maybe that's part of it.
Ronnie O'Sullivan, he went to Wanstead High School, where my mum taught for many years, not while he was there, and he learned to play snooker in the now demolished Wanstead Snooker Club, which is where I grew up. So yeah, little link to Ronnie there.
Oh, very nice indeed. The inner workings of Alex Kalanorkis. That's very nice. Very nice indeed. Let's look at two more drivers very quickly on this one here. Fernando Alonso, Aston Martin, once again knocking his team out of the park, isn't he? Lance Stroll down in 17th. And the other one is the Alpine of Esteban Ocon. Getting in the points there. So Alpine starting to improve, it seems, or at least one of them anyway.
Yeah, I think this is... hopefully a little turning point for Alpine. I think, you know, it's very hard to get points this year. We've talked about that so many times on this podcast, how tricky it is. So that, you know, that could be really beneficial. And what, they're clear of Williams and Sauber now. I mean, that could come with millions of pounds come the end of the season. So well done to Ocon for doing that. It must have been quite heart in mouth stuff when he was fighting Alonso, and obviously they would have been worried on the Alpine pit wall. But yeah, improvements have been coming. You know, that floor upgrade he got in China, obviously other new bits were added to it, or replacement parts, and finally the car is at the weight limit, at the minimum weight limit. And Pierre Gasly got the upgrades here as well, so they're finally not giving away. I was told it was 0.2 a lap in excess weight at the beginning of the season in Bahrain. So that's significant over a race stint. It's significant in qualifying. And just to have made that, clawed that back quicker than they were originally anticipating is very impressive for Alpine. So well done to them, because I think we have been rightfully quite critical of them. But, you know, in turning things around to that extent, even though it's not, you know, they're not winning races and they're not celebrating one point, overly celebrating it. You know, we should give credit where it's due. So fair enough. They've got to bring more downforce now and rapidly improve that car, and hopefully they will, because it's a storied squad. It's been in the news a lot because obviously, you know, Ayrton Senna starting his career there when it was Tolman, Michael Schumacher 30 years ago this year, winning the world title when it was Benetton. I'm told by Bruno Famin that there's no plans to celebrate that anniversary, which I think is extremely uncool. But from his position, it's like, I don't want any distractions from my team, especially seeing as it wasn't It wasn't known as Alpine then, and wasn't even owned by the Renault Group. So I do get the cold hard logic, but yeah, we would have liked to have seen something sort of embracing the previous success of Team Enstone.
Yeah, absolutely right. So it sets us up nicely for the next Grand Prix coming in 2 weeks' time. For now, though, Alex, thanks very much for joining us and for casting your eye over what, as I said at the beginning, was a pretty enjoyable race. So with the dust settled in Miami, Max Verstappen extends his lead at the top of the standings. He's on 136 points now ahead of his teammate after six Grand Prix. Charles Leclerc just ahead of Lando Norris and Carlos Sainz, who are tied on 83 points. Then it's Oscar Piastri, George Russell, Fernando Alonso, Lewis Hamilton, Yuki Tsunoda in 10th, Lance Stroll in 11th, and still Oliver Behrman, yes, the Ferrari driver who had the one outing in Saudi Arabia, he still lies 12th in the championship. In the constructors, well, it's Red Bull leading the way, of course. They're extending their lead over Ferrari. McLaren now firmly the third team in the constructors, 124 points for them. That's 60 more than Mercedes at this stage. And that'll do for the Miami Grand Prix review. Then Formula One is back in a fortnight's time in Imola for round 7 of the World Championship. Is McLaren back, or will Red Bull reassert their dominance? Don't forget to hit the follow button to stay up to date with all of our content. And remember to enjoy the James Allen on F1 podcast, remembering Senna being released on the 7th of May. That's Tuesday to you and I. A great weekend for Lando Norris, taking his first ever Formula One victory. The first of many? Well, only time will tell. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.